Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your friend and host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today. I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone no matter what stage of life you're in. I hope that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode, and it would mean the world to me if you left a rating or review. I'm so glad you're here, and I cannot wait to introduce you to this week's guest. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about this amazing new prayer journal I just received from my friend Stephanie Mae Wilson. If you are in a season of waiting or transition, trying to make a big decision, or just struggling to trust God with your future, then this prayer journal is for you. It's called Between Places, 100 Days to Trusting God When You Don't Know What's Next. And it's available now at smaywilsonshop.com. And actually, Stephanie put together a special discount for all of my listeners. Again, you can pick up the copy of Between Places at smaywilsonshop.com and use the promo code PODCAST for 15% off. And now on to today's episode. Today we have my husband, Jesse Tapley, on the show, and we are going to talk all about our adoption process. We're answering questions sent in by friends on Instagram, and we are just going to share our heart behind adoption, Zoe's adoption process, and just kind of all things adoption related while we're in the series, It's Time for Relationships. One of our most important relationships, obviously, is our adoption with Zoe. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's what we're going to do.
Fun game for all your listeners. Drink every time you hear the word adoption.
Drink your coffee?
Yes.
I don't know if that's appropriate.
It's absolutely not.
Anyways, so friends, grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. All right, Jesse, welcome back to It's Time for Coffee.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. How many times have you been on the show? Do you know?
I think two. Three.
Really? This is your third or this is your fourth?
I think this is my fourth.
So welcome back. We are talking about relationships in this series. How have you enjoyed this series so far?
It's so good. I'm just diving right in.
So today we're talking about our adoption. So can you tell us a little bit about your heart for adoption before we jump in?
No. Next question. My heart for adoption before we started or when we started this process?
Yeah, maybe a little bit of both. A little background. Like, we don't need to go into the whole adoption story because that's actually on, like, episode one, I think. Mm-hmm. Or no, it's a while back. Anyways, well, I'll link to it. But, like, you had a heart for foster care and adoption way before I did. Is that correct?
Yes. I've always thought that we were going to foster. I've always thought that was something that I wanted to do and we should do. And adoption actually wasn't very much on my radar before you reading that fateful book. Mm-hmm.
So you had a heart for foster. I did not, for foster care, I should say. And then I read a book, Kisses from Katie, and it just broke my heart. And I really heard the Lord say, I've called you to be a mother. What are you going to do with the ones that don't have mothers? And so that's kind of how our adoption journey started. So tell us a little bit, like, can you do the Cliff Notes, like Tapley? Cliff Notes version of our adoption story.
Yes. So you read that book, you shut it and looked at me and said, we're going to adopt a little child from Africa.
Or
sponsor one. And sponsoring is not bad, but it just wasn't something I wanted to look into or follow through with.
It's very different. Like, it's very heads or tails.
Yeah.
Adopt it's or like, foster. Yeah. Or adopt or sponsor. It's like very different things.
Yep. So I said, pump the brakes, let's talk about this and pray about this. And so we both independently and together prayed for about 3 days about it and came to the same conclusion that it was time to party. And so we Googled how to adopt from Africa.
Because we knew that Africa is where we wanted to adopt from. Yep. We initially thought we were going to adopt from a really small country called Burundi, but we were not old enough to adopt from there. So we couldn't do that. So one of the questions we got a lot was, where did you start and how did you know where to adopt from? And so do you want to answer that question?
Sure. So we both knew and agreed in our heart that we were being called to Africa. And that was both due to internal and external forces, I think. Our church was very involved with the country called Burundi at the time. And I just feel like the Lord was leading us in that direction, whether it was that country or not. And then we also just, I think, felt tugged that way. Like mm-hmm. It wasn't ever a question whether it was going to be China or America or anywhere else. It was always Africa.
Yeah. And then how did we decide which country?
So there was a couple different factors. One of them was I couldn't get the amount of time off work to go to some of the countries because you had to be in country for like 3 months. But several of them, you had to be over 30 years old, which I was 29, but Jeanette was 26, seven, something like that.
Yeah. So what I did, because I handled all of our adoption paperwork and all of that. That was kind of like my job during the adoption process. And so when we started, the biggest thing that we did was we Googled how do you adopt a child from Africa. And number two was going to each country's like immigration page, basically, to see what their stipulations are or rules were with adoption. So then we just slowly but surely checked off countries. Like Ethiopia had you'd be in country for like 6 months. Mm-hmm. Like it was crazy.
Some of them were two trips, one being only a couple weeks, but then one being a couple months. So those were out of the question.
And then we decided to go with the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is Zoe's home country, because it was one of the easiest processing countries to adopt from.
Little did you know.
Yeah. So they said the timing was like six to 9 months was kind of what we were looking at. We knew it would probably be a year because paperwork and everything takes time. And then it turned into 3.5 years.
2.5 years.
2.5 years.
It was, the estimated time from start to finish was 8 to 18 months. And I was like, man, even in the worst case scenario, 18 months isn't all that bad. Turns out that wasn't the worst case scenario. No. And we were in process for 30 months or so.
Yeah. So. And that was really hard. And that there's a whole long story to that, you know, behind the country of Congo shutting down, with adoptions being processed differently, different rules being put into place, all of that stuff. So there was so many circumstances that were thrown in. Some of those things were good. Some of that was the U.S. Embassy making sure kids were being investigated a little bit more, so there wasn't trafficking style stuff going on. And then some of that was because Congo's president.
Super corrupt, using the kids as pawns and things like that.
So that was our adoption process timing. Where to even start? one of the questions is, where to even start? I think prayer is probably the best place to start. I think if you're called to adoption, the Lord is softening your heart for something amazing, but you also just want to be really sure that you're walking the path He wants you to walk. I'm trying to think of the right wording. Not to discourage you or anything, but like I want you to make sure that you know where to start. So like we started with prayer, and then once we were on the same page, it was Googling. I have some friends who started in prayer as well, and then they started with foster care, or they started with an agency, you know, local agency to adopt a baby. So we have friends who have done every which way, and so I think that's awesome. But I know that we all started in prayer and then research.
I would say yes, prayer for sure, but you need to be 100% on board, as does your spouse. Because we've also had friends, one really wanted to adopt and the other was on the fence or sort of resistant. And I highly suggest you both be 100% on board, because it's super hard.
Well, it's super hard in process, but that's just the beginning.
Right, that's what I mean. I mean adoption in general.
Yeah, and so let's go back and tell just a little bit more of our story. So we're talking about adoption today, and it's actually a really significant day in our family because Zoe landed in America 5 years ago today. You and Zoe came home from Africa today. She entered our family long before that, but physically entered our family 5 years ago. So this was what looked like the finale of our adoption process, right?
Externally, yes. it was the end of the road.
Yeah, and I think the one thing we weren't fully prepared for was this was just the beginning. Because while we longed for her and while our family and our boys were ready for her to be home, this was something completely new to her, and we did not prepare maybe the full weight of that.
Yeah, and I think that it's easy to get caught up in the support and the amazing community that rallies around you during the super hardship of waiting and fundraising, and you know, it mentally exhausts you emotionally, financially. I mean, it's hard, especially internationally, especially when you run into as many hurdles as we did, false alarms of her coming home and all that kind of stuff. So when she finally gets home, it's a celebratory ending of that support. And I'm not saying people ended their support of us and our family and everything, but kind of it felt that way.
Mm-hmm. Because you're home.
You're home, and yeah, you've reached that finish line. You've jumped that last huge hurdle, mm-hmm. and so everyone takes a collective sigh of relief and high fives and great job, everyone. And then we start our journey.
Yeah, it's kind of like having a baby in the sense that like everyone celebrates the birth, but mm-hmm. then you have to bring that baby home, mm-hmm. and you don't sleep anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very much similar with our adoption. Mm-hmm. So, So I guess maybe a little bit more background. Zoe is from the Democratic Republic of Congo, like we said. She was almost 5 when she came home. Zoe is deaf, and she had no language up to coming home. So that's kind of just like a peek behind our curtain a little bit more. She was 3 in process, celebrated 1 birthday, had 2 Christmases in the orphanage. Her story is definitely like hers to share. We don't go into a lot of that because just her own privacy issues. And if you know Zoe or if you've met Zoe at all, you know that she doesn't have a lot of privacy, but it's just not our place to share her story on my podcast that she can't listen to or approve. So that's kind of where we'll leave her story. But then our story is her coming home and just kind of entering this world of being a different looking family. And a family who signs now not well. Like, we were teaching her sign language. I didn't know sign language. And we were kind of just bumbling through, I think, the first year. I always say the first 6 months are a blur. Like, I don't remember the first 6 months of her being home. Similar to having a baby, you know, just that, like, kind of postpartum, post-adoption, what's it called? What am I thinking? Postpartum is, like, depression.
PTSD.
I have PTSD.
Yeah. Literally.
So, and then when you're dealing with a child with trauma, it stirs up your own trauma. So just kind of like life was just really hard those first few months. Honestly, first year probably, but first 6 months for sure. So let's go back to some questions. The whole process start to finish was home study.
Oh, what is the whole process?
Yeah, just kind of like bullet points. Home study.
Yeah, I would say the decision and coming to that, and then finding where, because the home study depends on that.
Yeah.
So know where, whether it's domestic or international, and what country you want to adopt from. Okay. And that's a lot of Googling. Finding an agency and seeing what their process is. And then I would say home study.
Yeah.
And then after home study, it's a flurry of different paperwork and letters and numbers like I-600 and, you know, all the things that go into that, entire backgrounds of we had to pull every single place we've lived in the last 10 years, which was a lot of places. Yeah. Reference letters. I mean, that's not even the bullet points.
We had to put together a dossier. So we had to put together a full, some families have to put together like a birthing book. Like so adoptive moms can look through that book and like pick you. We had to put together a whole dossier of
who we are,
everything. Our medical,
financial,
everything. So it was kind of like a proving yourself book.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole process is a hurry up and wait. So we would pull everything that we needed. We'd get our physicals. We'd get all this stuff. We'd send it in as fast as we could. And then we would just kind of wait. And that was always a really hard part for me, was just this kind of whiplash of like, here it goes. Okay.
Well, because every day that you take getting your stuff ready is another day that you have to wait. Mm-hmm. So if we did all of our stuff in a matter of hours, that means the next waiting period that might be 4 weeks starts today instead of tomorrow. So we were always in a rush and then wait for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then the next thing would come, hey, we need this. We'd do it instantly and then wait weeks and weeks and weeks.
And so that was like that, you know, all of those steps are part of the process. But I'll say 5 years ago, I mean, even 7 years ago, it's almost like having a baby. Like when, like having a baby 13 years ago with Zeke looks totally different than having a baby now as far
14
as
14 years ago.
I know, don't. but you know, technology has advanced. All of these things have changed. And so it's kind of, it looks different. So now, like for me to tell you what our process looked like, it doesn't look that way anymore.
Right, but that's getting specific. So the bullet points really are finding your agency and where you want to adopt from, getting a home study done, and then following the instructions of your agency. So that looks very different country to country and way different international versus domestic. So that middle part right there is very gray. It just depends on what your specific case.
Yeah.
And that could be months or years. Just depends.
This is kind of the last part I want to talk about, like the adoption aspect. And then I kind of want to go into like a little bit more about Zoe and kind of our stuff. But how did we make sure our agency was ethical? That's one of our questions, is how did you make sure that we were adopting from an ethical source?
So we had a kind of an interesting situation because we had signed on or were going to sign on with an agency, and then they broke off from their bigger agency, these two ladies. And so we had kind of a, not a personal relationship with them, but we had gotten to know them just courting them as our agents. And I think that just in conversations with them, we knew their heart was in the right place. They were doing it for the right reasons, and basically left it up to them to vet their children in waiting and lawyers and all the people, their whole team.
And one other thing that we did was we talked to a lot of adoptive parents. So in the middle of this season of beginning stages, it was kind of like, what do I do? How do we do this? Well, you're just thrown into all these Facebook groups who will say, this agency was awesome. Well, this agency did things wrong. Well, this people. So that was kind of how we vetted our agency, and then how we also vetted our the owners of the agency. Now, looking back, nobody's perfect.
Yep. And there's no perfect source. It's like going to Yelp and looking at a restaurant review. Well, there could be some people that had a terrible experience and some people that had a wonderful experience. And, you know, so you ask a source and, yeah, these people are perfect and wonderful. And then you ask another source and, no, they're terrible. These are the ones you go with. So it's, I don't know that there's a perfect way to figure out who's exactly ethical, because honestly, we're taking the word of everybody. There's nothing that we can see personally.
Well, and then you also look at ethics in America look different than ethics in Africa or in the Congo especially. I mean, and I want to speak very carefully here because the word trafficking is such a hot button right now, which it should be, absolutely. But one thing that I kind of mentioned earlier and is something that I'm super thankful for was the United States Embassy did something in the middle of our or in the beginning of our adoption process where they said, hang on, we are taking all of these cases, all of these adoption files, and we are investigating them. We want to go down to every single source and make sure these children are actually being signed over to an orphanage. We want to make sure they are actually abandoned or actually orphaned and all of these things. And so the one really great part about our adoption story is Zoe can tell us what happened. And so, because she was just old enough to have these memories. Unfortunately, she was just old enough to have these memories. Mm-hmm. So she has memories of this stuff. And so we can ask her, hey, tell me about your brown mom, which is what we call her original family. Tell me about your brown mom. And she'll tell us. And that matches up with the paperwork that we received. Some families' stories don't. And it's really kind of this hard thing to grapple with. And it's something that we've talked about. Do we do an extra investigation? Some families have done extra investigations. I honestly have
I initially put my trust in the United States Embassy and just kind of left it at that. And I think you kind of felt the same way.
Yeah, and it's there's only limited things you can do and trust. I mean, you have to just have trust. Like, you know, say what you want about the United States government, but we had to trust that that was the highest investigation in the land and that they were going to do due diligence, because it's not like I could go over with a pen and pad and ask people what they thought about, you know, what happened in real life, because you just can't do that.
Yeah.
And you can't talk to anybody over there on the phone or anything. Yeah. You can't do your own investigation.
So luckily we had a great social worker. We had a good lawyer and we had the United States Embassy on our side. So that's kind of how we made sure our entire process was ethical. And I will say sometimes it's not. And that's really, really hard.
One, you said you would speak very carefully, and that's important, especially this day and age. But I will say, and I've stood by for a long time, that ethics are cultural. And that doesn't sound very right, but the example I use is if you get stopped by a police officer in Africa and you give him and he demands $20 or he's going to arrest you, that's just how it works there. That's super unethical here, and that guy would lose his job and his life would be ruined, that police officer. There, that's how they feed their family.
Well, and then we also even look at, like, work ethic, but, like, timing over there. Like, we expect the African courts to work like American courts. Well, that's not how it works.
No, sometimes the judge just doesn't show up that day.
And so it's just culturally different. And so that was one thing that was hard for us to grapple with was, no, I need you to show up at this time because that's when our appointment is and our liaison just wouldn't show up. Yep. And so it was such a hard thing. But that was kind of just one of those major differences that we had to come to grips with during our adoption process. Agreed?
Yeah. Yep. And I mean, it's just hard to think about as Americans, like people paying people off to do certain things. And it's like, that's like literally part of the adoption cost over there is, you know, you have to pay to get, if you don't pay to get this paper done, it just will sit there for months, you know? So that's what I mean by ethics depend on where you are. 'Cause here, if somebody in the U.S. Embassy said, well, if you pay me an extra $50, I'll do this today, you could blow the whistle and again, that person could get in a lot of trouble. Where there, it's like, yeah, here's $50. I'm glad that you could do this for me today. and that seems unethical, but there, that's just how it's done. So those smaller issues, I think, are dependent on where you are and how things are done in that place. Now, the big issues, human rights issues, doesn't matter where you are.
Right.
Ethics are ethics. You know, you can't traffic children and then adopt them out.
That's wrong.
Okay. Yeah, that's wrong everywhere.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Denison Ministries. Denison Ministries is a movement creating 7 million culture-changing Christians who are committed to carrying out the truth of the gospel to their sphere of influence through a variety of ways, which is why Denison Ministries is excited about sponsoring what God is up to on the It's Time for Coffee podcast. One of the cool ways Denison Ministry has helped Christians feel closer to God is through their First 15 devotional. First 15 is designed to help you spend the first 15 minutes of your day experiencing God through meaningful devotion, scripture, worship, and prayer. You can sign up and get the First 15 email devotional sent directly to your inbox at first15.org/subscribe or start your day off with the First 15 devotional podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts.
So now I want to answer one of these questions that we got, and then I want to kind of transition us into more of this aspect of being the relational side of an adoptive family. And I'm saying adoptive family, that's not how we speak in our home. So from now on, I'm not going to speak like that. We are not an adoptive family. We are a family. We are not adoptive parents. we're just parents. Zoe's not our adopted daughter. She's just our daughter. So from now on, I'm going to like stop saying that because it's not how we speak.
Yeah, it sounds weird.
It does. So one of the questions that I had sent in was, did it take you time to fall in love with your daughter? And I don't think it took me time to fall in love with her, but there were times where I had to learn to like her.
Yep. And I think that's, I mean, anybody that's ever had a baby, like, you know instantly that you love this child with your whole heart. And it's like, I don't know, I haven't even met him yet. We'll see. But it, obviously that's not the case. It's, you're in love instantly. Mm-hmm. And that's.
And I even look at that with Titus. Titus and I had a really hard time bonding, even while I nursed, because he was more interested in seeing his big brother play. And I was like, no, this is our sweet time together. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what's going on over there? Mm-hmm. And so I think about that with Titus too, where Zoe and I had to learn to like each other because I think, honestly, because we're very similar people. And so that was kind of, when I saw that, I was like, no, it didn't take me time to love her, but it did take me time to like figure out this kid who I loved so much and I wanted so desperately, yet didn't understand fully in so many different ways.
Right. My issue was, you know, we've always run our household in a certain way, and the boys we've had since birth, so they just know the rules and I expect certain things, and mostly it's just obedience or respect. You know, if they don't, if they say something to you that's disrespectful, they know they're going to get in trouble. Where she didn't grow up with that, so it wasn't very innate with her. And I don't mean respect or anything, but just obedience. Like, she was a little more defiant because she had to be. She's a survivor of like some trauma, so she had to have some.
Well, she also had no language, so yeah, so somebody was, could say, come over here, and she doesn't have to do it because she doesn't hear it.
Yeah, and that was the other thing. So once she got enough language and she was still being defiant, that's where my we butted heads, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's just normal. I mean, we're getting to a stage with our teenagers that we're going to start butting heads. Yeah. You know, like, and it's just, it's normal. Wasn't... But at the same time, we want to say, like, while our pictures are super cute, like, we are a very cute family, we have all struggled with this adoption process, I think.
And we've often questioned, because we had two boys biologically, so when she came home and she's doing certain things that are different, it's like, is this because she's a girl?
Yeah.
Is this because she's deaf? Or is this because she's adopted?
Yeah.
Like, there's lots of, she's nothing like either of the boys, so... It was always like, is this an adoptive thing? I don't know. Yeah. Do other people struggle with this? Is this just because we have a girl now and they, you know, act different? I don't know.
I think so much of it. I for a long time, I was waiting for Zoe and Titus to kind of sort out their birth order, which was something I read a ton about, and you didn't care about birth order.
Nope.
But I cared about birth order. And so I kept waiting for Titus to, or Zoe to either exert her dominance and kind of like put Titus in his place, or... she's the youngest, so I just didn't know how this is going to kind of sort out.
I would have expected vice versa, where Titus would step up and not be the baby because he's not the youngest.
But it never happened. And so there was one day, probably 2 years in, that I was like, oh, he's always going to be our baby, but she's going to be our little girl.
Yeah.
And once that kind of hit me, I was like, okay. So she's just going to be a different bird.
So it's like two different birth orders. It's like we've got the boys, oldest and youngest, and they fall exactly in those roles. Mm. And it's funny because I grew up with just one brother. So they are exactly like we were, leader and want to please dad and all the things. And then Titus is a little bit more the baby, not being a baby, but that placeholder and defiant and all the things that I was as a younger brother. And then Zoe's just her own thing over on there. So,
Zoe is all glitter and sparkles, punk rock and noise.
So funny.
So what are some things as a dad who's walked through adoption now that you would give like new adopted dads or adoptive dads or people walking through this like process? What advice would you give dads right now?
I would just say to... have so much grace, because that's been one of my struggles just in my life, is giving more grace than I have given to anybody all the time. But just know, especially if you have biological kids already, it's not going to be like raising them. You just have to make so many different allowances, and that's not because they are victims necessarily, but they're just a different, you haven't raised them since the beginning. So there just needs to be a lot of grace and understand that things aren't going to go smoothly. They're not going to go like they did the week before you adopted and all that. So I would say number one, just give grace and expect unexpected stuff.
Yeah. I think mine would be, I think giving grace is so good. I think that's so wise. And I think one thing we probably did wrong and right was we tried to over communicate with the boys and try to make sure that they were feeling secure and feeling safe and feeling loved. And yes, our world got turned upside down, but are you okay? And then finally Titus goes, Mom, if something's wrong, I'll talk to you about it. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, sounds good. And he has, like, there's been times where he's been frustrated, or I think I always expected them to dislike her because she's adopted. Right. I expected to see them fight about,
or like, see her as an outsider.
Yeah. Maybe that's exactly it. And we just haven't seen it yet. And
I don't think they ever, I think they were like we were. It's like, yeah, that's our sister.
Right.
Instantly.
And it's been such a gift to have, because even when they're fighting and arguing, you know, just whatever, being siblings, it's like, well, I'm sorry. Like, what do you want me to do? Send her back to Africa? And they're like, how dare you? And so it's one of those, like, sweet things as a mom, because we knew this was going to wreck our family. Mm-hmm. And I've said it on the podcast before, like, I would sob and cry, like, Lord, you're wrecking us. And then I'd have that moment of, okay, wreck us. Wreck those kids. Because by wrecking us, you're saving somebody else. And what a beautiful thing. So I think in my darkest moments of struggling with adoption and with bringing her home and with knowing that this isn't plan A, but knowing that she belongs with us, it's just been that constant prayer of, like, just continue to wreck us, Lord. Just continue to wreck us and hold us tight, because that's all we can do. Is all, like, all we can do is accept this and love this. And while we have talked kind of negatively in the negative aspects about adoption, could you imagine our house without Zoe?
No, not at all. And I think that it's important to talk about the hard parts, because everyone will talk about the good parts all the time. I mean, you can go to any church and you can be put on a pedestal and you can be a rock star for adopting. I mean, it can go to your head if you let it, but it also, I mean, it'll lead you down a path that is going to be really, really, really hard. And it's glamorized, and Aaron Ivey does a super, super awesome sermon about when they first adopted, and you know, basically you turn into a rock star in your church, and everybody
good
rallies, and it's so great and everything. And it's like, it's important for people that have gone through it to talk about how much it sucks sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not all rainbows and butterflies and the Holy Spirit descending upon your life and how amazing you're going to be. I do think all that's true. I think that it is amazing and it's needed, and families that do it are, I'm not only talking about us, but we've seen so many families walk through, and it's just such an amazing thing, because a child gets to live in a home instead of an orphanage, and that's not only...
We get to live the gospel message.
Yeah.
We get to see.
Oh, yeah.
We
so
get to
much.
See.
And like, we get to see that.
Like, we get to see that, yeah.
We get to learn from it and everything, but... So I think it is an amazing thing, not to toot our horn, but to
Absolutely.
Toot every adoptive family's horn. It's amazing. But it also sucks.
It's so hard sometimes.
Like, there's so many things that's so hard. And
well, and I think right now even we're living in this time where our Black friends are saying, like, hey, this is actually really hard. And so we've had conversations with other adoptive families, with other Black friends, saying, how do we make sure that we're raising a proud little Black girl who's also deaf? Like, we're kind of on this, like, border of, like, well, man, she's got three massive identity things that we need to make sure that we're honoring her story and her in this. And so I know that I have some friends who have spoken some beautiful life into me to help Zoe grow into a beautiful Black, proud woman. And so that's kind of where I've been landing. But we've also had some really hard conversations about Black Lives Matter and about... We are a very white family raising a very Black girl, and we want to ensure that we are doing both correctly.
Yeah, and it's not only the Black community that she's a part of. She is a part of three communities that we are not. She is an adopted child, which I don't think will have much bearing on who she is. Right. I think she's just going to be a Tapley. But she is going to be a Black woman, and she's deaf, which is a huge... a very important
identity marker,
and in that community it's a big deal. And so I started this conversation or this section saying, like, there's a lot of things that suck, but there's a lot of things that are just hard. I mean, there's things that are super hard with our biological boys, or if we had no kids, or if you know, work is hard. I mean, there's so many battles you have to fight in life, and this is just one that, like, I think it's extra hard because we know we asked for it.
Yeah.
So when we reach these precipices of, like, difficulty, and, like, we're at our wit's end and we don't know what to do, and, you know, where she's going to go to school, and why did we, I mean, we have to learn a new language and all this kind of stuff. You know, it's just hard that we chose it. Yeah. I think that's the difference, you know.
Well, and I think this is exactly why you and I both say make sure both partners are on board. Because those moments where I'm like, this is the hardest thing in the world and I don't want this anymore. And I mean, I say that about having biological kids too. But and Jesse's like, yeah, it's fine. Like, you're not like, this was your idea. You decided to adopt.
Exactly.
And so we are united friends. So when I'm frustrated, he can go love on Zoe a little bit harder because I need to step back. But I also think this is a perfect segue into our community and how our community really has loved Zoe and pulled Zoe out of a bubble when we couldn't. You know, like, Matt and Juliana are coming over tonight to celebrate our adoption journey. You know, like they are the people who...
They've been there since the beginning. Oof,
like, Zoe and I wouldn't have survived the first 6 months without Juliana and Molly, like, in all reality. So I think that, like, the community rallying, I think knowing that we are united in this decision, and two, knowing that Zoe is better with us than anywhere she could be. And that sucks because it's not true, but it also is true.
Yeah. And that's a careful, that's a, a delicate thought process, because you can't let that be a marker of pride, right, or like, we did this for her, savior mentality, because we didn't. Like, the Lord did this for her and for us. Like, we're just passengers in this car. But yeah, I just to wrap up, the things are difficult. I mean, somebody can go through cancer in your family and it be way more difficult than anything we've been through, or you know, there's a lot of things, you know, when we move from Texas, like, if one spouse is on board and the other spouse is just like, okay, I guess this is what we're doing, you can always, there can be some animosity some blame. And I think that's why it's important to be on the same page with anything. I mean, somebody can, like, buy a vehicle and the other one not be on board, you know, and then financial hardship happens and it's like, see, this is because you...
Yeah.
So I think any big decision, you have to be both on board, and harder things can come because of that decision.
Yeah.
But it just helps when we know that we prayed this through and this was the right choice. Yeah. We were called to do this, just like we were called to move to Texas. I mean, that wasn't a decision of our own. We felt that
it was time. What is one of your favorite things about being a dad / adoptive dad? Is that right? Yeah. One of your favorite things,
because
you also, like, you got to become a girl dad when Zoe came home, so you kind of have this, like, sweet.
So I think that's, so being a dad is just the coolest thing ever. It's like the best job ever. It's so rewarding, and you can see some of those rewards right up front. You know, some of them are going to come later. I know that my battles are not complete because I know how I was as a child, and Titus is following exactly in my footsteps.
What did I tell you on our bike ride the other day?
I don't remember.
I've heard you talk to your dad the way he just spoke to you.
yeah. So I know there's harder times coming, but I know that, I mean, just seeing me and my brother's relationship with our dad, it's just so rewarding. It's going to be such a cool thing to see them all grow up. Being an adoptive dad, we specifically chose a girl, or I specifically chose to adopt a girl because I wanted a little girl at that point. I always wanted a boy and a girl, or two boys, and we did that and we're complete and weren't going to have any more kids. And then Jesus was like, just wait.
Watch this.
So being a girl dad has opened up, you know, father-daughter dances and dates and things like that, and seeing her just develop into like the girliest girl, but also her little punk rock face she's going through, which is so funny.
I love one of my favorite things about you being a girl dad is that she dresses up for you. Like the father-daughter dance is a perfect example of that, where she like gets dressed and she kind of hides away from you, and she comes out and she knows exactly what response she wants from you, and it's so hard for you to give it because you want her to be little and sweet forever. But she comes out in that like ball gown where she just looks so beautiful, and she's like, I did this for my dad. And that's just like, it gives me glimpses of what she's gonna look like on her wedding day when she comes out like, look, dad, like, ugh, so sweet.
On the flip side of that, being a girl dad, I've never had to worry about like modesty, and because our boys just dress like they're homeless all the time, and there's no issue there, and girls are gross and stuff, so that's still awesome.
Yeah.
But she's like, I want that tiny two-piece bikini, and I'm like, ugh, I struggle with it so much. Like, it's just our own pool at our own house, but
nobody's here.
Yeah, stuff like that that's been interesting and has made me have to step outside of my comfort zone on her behalf, and some of it is like, nope, and this is why we can't wear that, or this is why we can't do that, or talk about that, or whatever. So I'm gonna have to come out of my comfort zone, which is cool. Yeah, I mean, it's always when you know that that's coming, it's kind of hard.
Easier, yeah.
But
well, I think it's easier when you know it's coming, because you can prepare yourself. My favorite thing about being a mom / adoptive mom is man, I just love seeing her grow in these, like, 5 years feels like a really big marker to me. I don't know why, but I was just looking back at the pictures from when she landed at the airport, and it's just like, man, she has grown so much. And I think, like, on the adoptive side, I'm so thankful she feels so safe. It's one of those things where she feels safe, where she can argue with me. She feels safe that she can come up and hug us whenever she wants it. She feels loved and safe with her brothers and our family friends and stuff. And so
it's cool that she even feels safe after an explosion of her getting in trouble, or one of us yelling, or whatever's happening. And she can come down and know that she can still come crawl up in your lap and we still love her. So much, yeah.
I think one of my favorite things is right now she's just super into makeup, and so she did some makeup last night, and she came out and she's like, look. And like, it's just this fun conversation where I get to say like, hey, I actually think like dark lipstick looks better with your skin color, like try this or try this. And I get to see a little bit of my big sister's through me telling her like, actually try this lipstick, it looks a little bit better, because my mom and I didn't really have like a makeup relationship where my big sister's really, well, my big sister Kelly for sure did. And so I get to kind of like pass a little bit on to her. And that was one of the first really cool things I got to, not first, but one of the things that made me think of my big sister Kelly initially was I bought her a caboodle. And so that was like, so anytime she pulls out her caboodle and starts doing makeup, it just kind of like allows me to see myself as a little girl, but also like the memories of my big sisters in that too. So really, really cool. So recently I've really been thinking a ton more about that verse. It's time for everything. There's a season for everything under the sun. And somebody just asked me if that's why I named it It's Time for Coffee or It's Time for Jesus. And it wasn't, but it is now.
So good.
Oh, good. And so I want to ask you, Jesse, as we close out, this is a new question I'm going to start asking everybody on the podcast. What is it time for you right now? Like, what's going on? It's time for what in your life, in your season right now?
I think that it is time for intentional teaching. Like as a dad, I think you're always intentionally teaching, and it's really fun to like teach them how to, you know, whatever it is you're into, how to throw a football, how to ride a bike, how to whatever when they're little. But now it's like, I'm going to teach them how to build things or fix cars, because Zeke's 14. He's coming into a vehicle stage, and I'm excited to get him like an older vehicle to teach him how to change tires and work on brakes and, you know, all the things that I know how to do and the things my dad taught me how to do. So I think they're little adults almost. So it's time to teach them practical ways to live, you know, like not quite like we're going to go build a fire or tie knots or whatever, but it's like, these are things you're going to need to do. Like you're going to have to know how to change oil. Yeah. And I mean, just things like that. I'm pretty excited about starting, I think last year with Zeke's trip to New York, where it was like, this is how you read a map. Like, this is how you get around a big city. I don't know how to get around here until I get here and learn how. You know, you look at your phone and you got to get from point A to point B, but should we take bikes or should we take a subway? You know, just like practical life application stuff that they're getting to a development point where they can understand some of that, like how money works and how life works and jobs.
Even
and stuff.
School shopping this year, I was like, look at how much this costs. And they're like, well, I'm like, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
But so just showing them like what the real world kind of looks like in that sense as like adults, I think is really cool. And I know that you did that with them out at the camper the other day. And there'll be stuff like that you do with Zoe, especially just different in different ways. Mm-hmm. Teaching a deaf child is a little bit different, but you lead by example very well. And so I know that you will continue to do that in a really neat way.
Thank you.
So thanks for being on to talk about
what
adoption.
What about you?
Oh, I don't
know. What is it time for you?
I think in this season, it's been really fun to take weekends off, which sounds so stupid.
Yeah, I was
so going to
say, with your new developments in your work, like it's a hustle season.
Yeah.
So it's nice to take breaks, huh?
Yeah. So it's been time, like the weekends have been, it's time to like rest. Like a couple weekends ago, I was like, my goal is to read a book this weekend. And I did. And it was amazing. And
I think you read two.
I read like one and a half, but yeah. So it's kind of like it's time to rest and it's time to like intentionally pour in and work really hard and then pull back and rest. And doing my own company didn't allow for that a ton because I was all by myself. And now I work with a team and on a team, and I get to work when it's time to work and I get to rest when it's time to rest. And I kind of get chastised if I don't rest when I'm supposed to rest. And so it's been really, really, really nice. So that's that. But it's also, it's almost time for school. So the boys go back to school next Monday, and Zoe has about 2 more weeks of distance learning. And so we're just kind of figuring out what this next season of school looks like. And it's so crazy because I'm like, it's time for school. And they're like, but I'm going to miss you guys so much.
You've been home for 6 months straight.
So yeah, Jess, thanks so much for being here. Thanks for talking about adoption. I hope that we haven't discouraged anybody from adoption. But if you are looking into adoption and you want to adopt, please reach out to us. We are a lot more encouraging than I hope we sounded encouraging. Do you think we sounded encouraging?
Yeah. And I think that if you're discouraged from adopting from what we said, then you weren't in the right place to adopt in the first place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's true. Adoption is great. We are so thankful to be a part of this like special community, but we do believe that it is a calling for not the faint of heart.
Yeah, and you need people, and we can be those people. So
yeah, let us help you. Let us pray for you. Let us pray with you, and we'll talk to you guys more. Thanks for being here.
So how do I get paid for this?
I don't call my person. I don't have a person.
I know. It's you.
Not me. I'm not paying you for this.
How much is it?
Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come find me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley or on Facebook at The Jeanette Tapley. If you have any questions about the show or what's coming up, be sure to check out itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait to see you back here next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friend.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.